everyone. Welcome back to Relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I am going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is definitely going to be a furry friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful rock hyrax. This, of course, is a very special listener episode dedicated to Astrid Day, which is spelled D-A-E. I hope that is how it is pronounced. Nicole, Caleb, Charlotte, and also to Tara, or maybe to Tara. You know what I just realized? For many names, there are going to be alternate pronunciations, and just for the sake of not butchering your name on your own episode, I think it would be helpful that for those of you that have such names as myself, let me know also how to pronounce it. Many of you have already done this, but come on, this is season 8. This is no joke anymore. I cannot start the season off with mispronounced names. I give all of you again a very hearty thanks for 7 wonderful seasons, and I look forward to another 7. We are going to do another Q&A next episode, so stay until the end to figure out how to do that. If you would like to support the show's mission of helping people relax while learning about animal facts, come to the Patreon, where you get an extra 4 episodes a month only for $1 a month. You can stay on for whatever dollar amount you choose, whether it be 1 to 10, I think. All of the different tiers get exactly the same content, so it is all up to your generosity. A huge shout out to George Flad for the ambiances used in today's episode. His work is linked in the description, and you should check him out. And now, let us begin to wind down a little bit. If this is your first episode of the show, I welcome you to our animal podcast family with open arms, and if you are returning, you know exactly what I am going to be asking of you. I have 3 primary exhortations for you. The first is that you put on your favorite shoes for hiking. We are certainly going to be needing those for where we are going today. My second encouragement to you is perhaps the most important. It is that you realize where you carry tension. For you, that might be in the head, in the neck, the legs. Here, everybody is different, but regardless, my exhortation to you is the same. Relax whatever it is that you are tensing. I always find a bit of imagery to be helpful, so bring up in your mind some Jell-O and do your best Oscar award-winning impression of it. But keep in mind, this is the first episode of season 8, so feel free to choose some festive Jell-O. If it is the case that you don't even know where you carry tension, a little exercise might help. You can start from the bottom of your feet in your mind and just scan all the way up to the top of the head, relaxing as you go. So you relax the feet, then the ankles, then the shins, and just up and up. That way you can find specifically where you tense the most. My third and final exhortation to you is that you give your mind permission to wander and journey with me onto a rocky cliff in Africa where the rock hyrax resides. Like many, many other episodes, we take our journey to Africa. Africa and Australia share that peculiar characteristic of having some of the most amazing native animals. Although I am about 98% sure that Aussies are involved in some global conspiracy whereby they shepherd some of the coolest animals in the world only to their little continent, I have no such opinion about this one. Regardless of how they got here, it is without a doubt one of the most biologically diverse places in the world. But I have to say that upon just a cursory inspection of the rock hyrax, mostly through Google Images if I'm being honest, they might be a candidate for one of my new favorite animals. The rock hyrax lives throughout most of Africa, but keep in mind that we could even be on the coast of the Arabian Peninsula and even many places along the way to Lebanon. Of course, their common name implies something about them. They love to hang out in areas where there are rock formations and boulders, as these things provide protection to this special creature. If you take a look around here, you'll notice that many rocks have these little white patches on them, and that is how we can know that the rock hyrax is hidden somewhere here. Like many other animals, this hyrax will mark their territory with their urine, which will, subsequently, crystallize and form little white patches on the rocks. They are the little artists here on this cliff, but it seems as though they only have white paint to work with. Their scientific name is Procavia capensis. The former part of their scientific name, Procavia, comes from the combination of two Greek words that mean something like precursor to guinea pigs, or before guinea pigs. The latter portion of their scientific name, capensis, is actually a Latin word, and it means from the Cape, which of course refers to the area known as the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa. This indicates the geographical origin or native land of the species. So just from their scientific name, we learn that this is a precursor to the guinea pig from the Cape. However, that scientific name, while it might be physically intuitive or superficially, it can be a little bit deceptive. Although they can easily be seen as rodents, genetically, the closest animals to them are elephants and manatees. I think it is that fact alone that makes this creature so special. One would think they would be much more genetically similar to a guinea pig or some other rodent, perhaps, of the desert, but they are simply built different. I think just as a physical specimen, just pulling up Google Images and looking at them, this animal can easily become your favorite. They are also called rock dassies or rock rabbits. They are small, stub-tailed, and kind of look like rabbits too. They have a short snout, a cleft upper lip, short but very stable legs, and short ears. They are typically a brownish-gray color and will be equipped with those long black whiskers. On their backs, however, they have this peculiar black patch of hair, and we will learn why in just a moment. This animal has some pretty strong molars, which are much needed in this environment of tough vegetation. To accent those strong molars, they have two large incisor teeth that grow out to be something like little tusks, resembling in a very small way an elephant's. The rock hyrax is of course made for this environment. They have rubber-like soles on their feet, and by the help of glandular secretion are kept moist. Within the middle of that rubber-like sole, they will have a divot, a hollow, a gap, whatever you'd like to call it. But by this very intentional anatomy, it allows their feet to become like little suction cups. When we think about their environment, this really makes sense. They oftentimes need to climb up very steep and rugged surfaces, many of which might be smooth or slick, And despite all of these things, they can climb well and jump well. Much of this is due to the very well-designed feet that they have. Knowing this creature already, the next thing someone is going to tell me is that they are genetically similar somehow to an octopus. But of course, no such connection has been drawn. So let's talk about their behavior. How do they live their lives? Like many other animals with a similar stature and size, they live in large groups, colonies of up to 50 individuals. They don't have that sophisticated of a defense system, and so they opt for a safety in numbers approach. The day of the rock hyrax will typically start with many hours of sunbathing together. After they have decided that they are warm enough, they will go out to find some food. If we were to come out when it was raining or when it wasn't very warm, we probably wouldn't see any at all. That is because when the weather is not to their liking, they simply will stay indoors. Thankfully for them, this sort of environment has more warm days than cool. From what we have learned already, we can surmise that they are diurnal. This means that they are awake, do their feeding, all of those kinds of things during the daytime. But interestingly, researchers have documented them coming out of their little hiding places during more bright or moonlit nights. But in general, the behavior of the rock hyrax is mostly sedentary. Only roughly 5% of their time is spent doing something active, feeding or leaving their hiding place, walking around. About 95% of the time, as the young people say, they are just chillin'. One interesting thing is that sometimes two different species of hyrax have been seen to share the same shelter holes and even to enjoy a sunbathing session together. In some parts of Africa, the rock hyrax and the bush hyrax will overlap in terms of the rocky areas they have chosen to reside in. Many times they won't force each other out, and they will even have play dates where their young will play together. While it is the case that the rock hyrax and the bush hyrax are really different in some important ways, they seem to understand each other well. The bush hyrax deserves its own episode, so I'm not going to go into it here. The kind of vegetation that is available here for the rock hyrax sort of demands a tough digestive system, and fortunately for our furry friends, they are equipped with just that. They have a three-chambered stomach lined with bacteria to help digest those plants. This thorough digestive process ensures the breakdown of some of those harder grasses and other things like leaves and fruits. And when they are out feeding together, you can see them in an interesting formation. These hyraxes, when they are chewing on some grass communally, form a circle, but they form this circle with their head pointing to the outside. This allows a 360-degree coverage of the environment to keep an eye out for predators, of which, unfortunately for them, are many. Here in this environment, there are leopards, servals, hyenas, jackals, pythons, and eagles. All of these predators that would make quick work of a rock hyrax. But with excellent vision, equipped with this military-style formation, they can spot a predator at over 1,000 yards, over 900 meters away. Many in the military science world talk about the phalanx, which is basically a tactical formation that consists of a bunch of infantry standing shoulder to shoulder. When you combine several files of such a position, you get a very strong, some would say impenetrable force. But in the military science world, do they talk of the rock hyrax formation? I am imagining that in these groups of 50 individuals, they are all shouting military commands to one another. As they feed, the dominant male will take a break between bites, peering around and watching out for danger. If he sees anything that is concerning, he will sound an alarm, basically just a loud shrieking noise. This formation will quickly be broken up, sending all of the hyraxes running around for cover. They will stay there until they think it reasonable to leave. If they have absolutely nowhere they can hide, they will wedge themselves backwards between rocks and bite savagely. Remember that they have some pretty long and even sharp incisors. Not something you would want to get nipped by. Now we can circle back to that black patch of hair on their backs. This black patch of hair covers a gland, but it can also be seen as a nonverbal form of communication, because whenever they are angry or frightened, this patch of hair will stand up, signaling to onlookers and other hyraxes that something is wrong. Though I imagine that the shriek would communicate this just fine. But this takes us to their communication. This is where they shine, in my opinion. They have a variety of noises. Snorts, grunts, squeals, wails, shrieks, growls. They will use different vocalizations in different contexts. A hyrax that is perhaps just saying hello will make a squeaky whistle sound. For that dominant male that sees an approaching hyena, they will make a sharp barking noise. If a rock hyrax is irritated with another member in their group or family, they will use a low grunting noise. And one of the coolest aspects of their communication is the noises that they make during courtship rituals. Male rock hyraxes sing to their partners. Now, to us, it doesn't sound all that great. They don't seem to be singing in major or minor keys, but to the females, the songs can be pleasing, maybe as opera can be pleasing to some of us. Whether or not the females are persuaded by the males will depend on how good their songs are. Certain aspects like rhythm, for example, are very important to the female hyrax. Scientists conducted studies using spectrogram analysis with the results of successive breeding seasons and have quite convincingly shown for the first time that males who, 1, sing more frequently, and 2, best maintain rhythm, go on to have better surviving offspring. The way they would track this was by putting colorful ear tags that were non-invasive or thin and colorful collars to identify the animals from a distance. One behavioral ecologist who participated in the experiment said that the most simple explanation is that a consistent rhythm is attractive to the female, that it reflects some quality in them. The structure of a rock hyrax song tends to get more complex as it progresses, kind of like our music. The song then finishes with a climactic end. Tell me you don't love this animal, I dare you. In terms of their family structure, female rock hyraxes will stay with their family for life. For every male, on average, there are 5 to 7 females. Females, on average, will have 2 to 3 pups at a time. When the rock hyrax is born, they already have their eyes and ears open, equipped with that same furry coat. They look nearly identical to the adults, just smaller. These young rock hyraxes will learn by imitation, watching and performing whatever the mother and the siblings do. Males will leave the colony at about 2 years of age to go live on the outside of another as they dream and maybe plot of taking over it one day. Now let us move to the name of the episode. Hyrax. What does it mean or where does it come from? This one is pretty short and sweet. it comes from an ancient Greek word that means shrew mouse. Of course, given that the hyrax looks rodent-like, this makes sense. And now for the dad joke portion of the episode. Honestly, I could not find a hyrax or rock hyrax joke on the internet, so instead I asked ChatGPT. The prompt was, give me a dad joke about the rock hyrax. Most of the jokes that it gave me aren't even jokes. Most of them I don't even understand. For example, ChatGPT said, what do you call a magical rock hyrax? A Hogwarts. Can anybody explain to me what that means? Is the rock hyrax a kind of hog or something? Do they have warts? I don't know. And so I am going to just choose one of the responses that actually seemed to be a joke. Why don't rock hyraxes ever get lost? Because they always keep their rock-solid directions. I am pretty sure I just became ill. See, the problem with this joke is that you can literally just replace directions with anything. For example, I can just make one on the spot. Why do rock hyraxes make good chefs? Because they always follow rock-solid recipes. Because they always use rock-solid ingredients. Suffice it to say, your guys' dad jokes are much better than this advanced AI. Now let us move to the Spotify responses. If you don't know, on Spotify, you can reply to the Q&As. There is a new one each episode, and I read three of them each time. The question I asked last episode was, if you could communicate with one species of animal, which would you choose and what would you want to learn from them? We Dig Homestead opens with Sasquatch. But my question kind of implied you would choose an animal you cannot already communicate with. You can already send me emails and Instagram messages. But We Dig Homestead continues, no, just kidding. Goats. I'm always wondering what our neighbors are trying to say when they bleat. They do it so much, I wonder if they're talking to each other or trying to tell us something. Well, with the beards that many goats have, I'm sure that it would be nothing but wisdom. Skater Chick replied, the house cat. It would be fascinating to know how distinctly they can hear and how they communicate with each other. See, I am not a very big cat person. I don't mind them very much, but most cats I have come into contact with have been pretty mean to me, so I don't know if I would want to communicate with them. But maybe they would have some important insights. I don't know. Actually, I just realized that a few of you said cats. Family Lehman Martin, Super Blast Monkey Pie, that's quite the username, and Eno or Eno. M said octopus. See, that is definitely one I can get behind. The octopus, the crow or the raven, the puzzle solvers of the animal world, I imagine would be pretty cool. I am surprised that I can't find any of you who said a primate. Am I the only one who would want to talk to an orangutan, to a chimpanzee? But anyways, all of your animals would indeed be super cool to communicate with. Today's review of the show on Apple Podcasts is from Banjo's Shadow, who wrote all the way from the United States of America. And Banjo wrote, this podcast is one of my favorites. I love learning about animals, and Steph's voice is very soothing. I usually fall asleep before the end of an episode, doing my Oscar-worthy impression of Jell-O. I also really appreciate Steph's sense of humor and his genuine interest in the topic. I do miss the ums and the chamomile tea breaks, but I understand the changes. Thanks, Steph, for all of your hard work. Thank you, Banjo, for the abundance of kind words in your review. I am grateful that you are a part of the Jello Squad, aka the Animal Podcast family, and I frequently forget until you guys remind me that on the early episodes, I would just be sipping tea and I would frequently mention it. I can actually use a chamomile tea break right now. I can feel myself getting sick from something. But thank you again, Banjo. I am grateful for your listenership, and I look forward to many more adventures together. If you listen on Spotify, make sure to remember to reply to those questions. I love interacting with you guys, and I choose them at random, meaning that just because I read your reply this week doesn't mean I won't read it next week too. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, I encourage you to leave a review. It does so much for the show, and I appreciate it. To request an animal, you can go to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and click on the Submit and Animal Request tabs. To reach out to me, Steph Wolf, for any other reason, you can send an email to relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com or send a message to relaxwithanimalfacts on Instagram. We are going to be doing a Q&A episode next week in celebration of the beginning of Season 8, so if you have any questions for me, you have a couple of options of how to send them in. One is to go on the Instagram. I will be posting a story there where you can ask me questions, or you can send me an email. Just make sure to include in the heading or somewhere the word question, and we will read it next week, maybe. I am not sure if we can get to all of them. Last time we had quite a few, but we will see how many we can go through. If you are not a member of the Patreon, I encourage you to come join us there. You get an extra 4 episodes a month, and you can support the show's mission. I encourage you to check out George Vlad. His work has allowed us to travel here, and his stuff is linked in the description. The facts in this episode came from seaworld.org, nationalzoo.si.edu, animals.sandiegozoo.org, and nationalgeographic.com. What an amazing animal we have learned about today. This is definitely an animal that gives me a run for my money in terms of my favorite animal. It would take a lot for me to not have the orangutan as my favorite creature, and I think the rock hyrax has gotten as close as any. I am so grateful that you have taken the time to join me on this adventure, and I look forward to the next one together with the next animal. Take care.